Welcome to the New Yankee Word Shop, an English and Portuguese celebration of words. Today I have with me the hosts of Antiques Freaks, Ken and Dee. Welcome!
Oh, hello, Ken here.
Hello!
Happy Halloween-ish. So, you may be wondering why I've gathered you here today. I was curious about this factoid I found. It says, quote, "For a long time, Halloween was mostly about fortune telling, and the treat stuff only kicked into high gear after World War II, when sugar rationing ended."
Interesting.
Yeah, isn't that funny? And I remembered some discussion of fortune telling from your Beasel episode, and on my own end, I had seen a number of odd early 20th century Halloween cards on Pinterest having to do with finding out who was your love on Halloween by lighting a candle and looking into a mirror or something.
Huh.
Yeah, so like those were the things where I was like, wait, was Halloween different at the turn of the century?
A little bit.
Oh, and also that movie, Meet Me in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That Halloween part is so freaking scary.
It's so weird.
Yeah. It's so and weird. Like, I remember watching it as a kid being like, wow, that was messed up back then.
Yeah. Why can't I throw a dummy onto the railroad tracks on Halloween, Grandma?
Yeah. Come on, Grandma.
Wait. How many movies is that happening? Because I was just thinking of the... Wait, that was an overpass and a man died. Never mind.
Different movie.
Different movie.
Meet Me in St. Louis. No one dies except the dolls.
And that's the saddest part of all.
But it is a really nice, morbid current that runs through the whole movie. Is Tootie is always burying her dolls, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah.
But anywho... For anyone who does not know what we're talking about, it was I want to say mid-40s, early 1950s movie starring Judy Garland about early 20th century America.
The Gilded Age.
And it's cut up into four seasons, which is kind of
yes,
nice.
Very convenient.
Which is how we got into the Halloween part of that. But basically, a lot of what I'm discussing today comes from mainly... two sources, although there are others. These were the two that were the most helpful. So the Boston Globe Review by Catherine Whitmore. And then, funnily enough, an article from CatholicEducation.org.
Hmm.
Huh.
Which was by Mary Read Newland, called All Hallows Eve. But it kind of like answered most of the questions I had. And I was like, why is this literally... the last article I looked at before I started this podcast, as opposed to like maybe the first one. But you know, that's how it works, I guess. So in addition to asking you guys about what the heck is going on at the beginning of the 20th century and fortune telling Halloween, my other question was, how did we get from a pagan holiday to a Christian holiday to fortune telling, to candy, costumes at Target, and haunted houses? Because it just seems like a weird progression and an odd collection of things.
It is wild.
And yet the progression couldn't be more natural.
But it's not natural though, because it goes pagan, then Christian, then fortune telling, which is not a particularly Christian thing, then jumps to candy?
One could argue for the Christian origins of the spiritualist movement leading to the popularity of fortune-telling.
Oh, you know what, though? You are so right.
I knew Ken was going to trot that out.
No, this is why I called
it's
you.
It's not a phone call until Ken trots out the Christian origins of the spiritualist movement of the 19th century. Every goddamn party, he's like this.
But you need to be like this because somehow I found the time to forget that.
So,
and it's a piece we needed.
It is an important piece.
Yeah. So that literally makes that part make sense. Thank you, Ken.
You're welcome.
Alrighty. So The author Bannatyne has a quote saying, "Halloween originated as a pagan Scottish festival celebrating summer's end with feasts and bonfires, specifically the Gaelic Celtic harvest festival, Samhain, brought to us by Scottish and Irish immigrants."
Sounds legit.
Yeah, legit. I was wondering, like, so in my looking through, like, history, how we got from pagan to Christian, I got stuck on Halloween literally meaning the night before All Saints Day.
Uh-huh.
Which I guess I should define at this point because I talked about it. Okay. It's a contraction of All Hallows Eve. Hallow sprung from the Old English word for holy, and een is a contraction of evening, thus Halloween for the night before All Saints Day. Thank you, Britannica.com.
Thank you, Britannica.
Thank you, Britannica.
Yeah, so my understanding of it, like, and you guys can all correct me if I'm wrong, is mostly just that, like, the Christians picked a cool day for all their dead people, and the Celtics had a pretty similar day for their dead people in a less Christian way, and then, the Christians were just like, stop it, it's mine now.
As with most holidays.
Yeah, I was surprised to find that, like, the Christian culture's All Saints Day was so much like what was going on Halloween evening and for Dia de los Muertos and what people were doing in Italy.
Whatever that was.
That it was like they...
Yeah.
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 Everybody's got a day.
It's like they all have a day in the fall for some reason. I understand why Christianity chose that day, because that's how they got pagan people to do their thing. Is just take their holidays and be like, yes, you can still have that festival, but now it's about Jesus, but you can still have all that food and do your weird dances and shit.
Yeah, the term for that is actually syncretism.
Whoa.
That's,
what?
Yeah,
say
when
that
the
again.
It's called syncretism is when the church, I don't know if it's Catholic specific. In my head, everything's Catholic specific.
Well, up until Martin Luther puts his nail in the door, it's all Catholic specific.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was Rosicrucians, but syncretism is the process through which the church and any kind of, like, local or, like, cultural event or, like, belief, kind of like when they blend. Ireland does this a lot because Ireland had, I'm not going to say a not contentious relationship with Christianity, but, like, culturally, the blend happened more smoothly and naturally.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about syncretism, you turn to Ireland a lot because it was the least worst of the syncretism that happened as a result of colonialism.
The least worst part.
The Portuguese, I mean, I'm going to bring this, I'm going to be liberal with the Portuguese, because this podcast does feature a Portuguese.
But we can, for now, for the sake of the fact that we're talking about an American holiday that's an amalgamation of Christianity and paganism, I think we can shorten our discussion of Portuguese and throw everyone in one basket.
Yeah, well, it's just, the Portuguese are really famous for their non-colonial syncretism. They kind of threw over most of their, like, native belief systems, holidays and all of that, and they blended it with, like, Christianity and Catholicism. Just, they loved it. There's not, like, a lot of conflict between the Portuguese and the slow spread of Christianity.
Weird. So they had, like, really successful missionaries or something?
It probably has something to do with their history as, like, traders and circumnavigators, where a lot of being Portuguese was just going around and taking parts of other cultures and integrating them into your own.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so that is syncretism. I wanted to bring that up just because it feels pretty germane to how Halloween happened and how it became an insane mashup of, like, spooky pagan religious dead saints, ghosts, God, who knows?
Sure. and also somehow our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
He's always, well, because he's always there.
I guess he's omnipresent or something.
One might argue that's his entire deal.
Yeah, fair enough, Ken. That makes sense.
I actually don't think syncretism is specifically religious, but for this purpose, I will be using it that way.
Yeah, no, it's a good word for taking a pagan holiday and putting an overlay of Jesus on top of it.
Yeah, and like you said, the Christians were really good at looking at these similarities and saying, wait, but what if your thing was my cooler and better thing?
And everybody was like, we're partying, yeah, sure, yeah. Whatever, we're still partying!
As long as the Christians just put Jesus' face on the party and didn't stop the party, it generally went smoothly.
Yeah, I think they, at some point, figured that out, and that became the strategy. So our dear friend, Mary Read Newland, has some points about early Christianity in England. And she's talking about how you celebrate All Saints Day back in the day. And these were little bits, little factoids I had never heard of before. So Mary writes, apparently how you spent the vigil of All Saints Day depended on where you lived in Christendom. And then she's naming specific parts of England, but I, for the life of me, do not know the difference between Brittany and the Bretons. Maybe those are the same people?
I have no idea.
Maybe that's somewhere in France.
Brittany is a chunk of France that England thinks it owns.
It's in France, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So wait, it is currently in France.
Yes, it is geographically in France. It is on the continent.
Spiritually,
it is
in England.
It is part of France that England thinks belongs to them because of reasons relating to the Norman conquest of 1066.
Feel terrible, just want her back.
So apparently in France, on their Night of the Dead and for 48 hours thereafter, the Bretons believed the poor souls were liberated from purgatory and were free to visit their old homes. Breton families prayed by their beloved's graves during the day, attended church for Black Vespers, and in some parishes proceeded to the charnel house, which I think just means like mausoleum.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just an incredibly metal word for mausoleum.
Yeah, charnel house.
Is there an actual band called Charnel House?
There is, yes.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah.
There, of course there are.
So it is directly metal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the metalheads love different words for, like, grave, mausoleum. I'm pretty sure there's a Portuguese band that's just called Grave in Portuguese.
Oh, nice.
Sepultura.
Hey, that's pretty rad.
I was just about to ask if there was a band called Sepultura.
Yes, Sepultura. Yeah, that's the word.
I like that. That's a good word.
A word that occurs once per chapter in Les Mis.
Oh, I'm sure. But anyway, the Black Vespers sometimes happened in the cemetery, and the congregation would pray by the bones of those not yet buried.
That's so cool.
Which I thought was kind of neat.
Well, it is very metal.
It was probably a healthier I'm gonna turn away from me just talking about how so cool that is. It was probably a healthier response to death than we have now.
I mean, probably.
Yeah, I think cultures that have a closer relationship to death have an easier time processing death.
Yeah, because they were like spending time with the bodies and just making peace with the fact that it happens, and they had like this cool fun party where you could kind of consummate your grief. You know, it seems better than what we do now.
Yeah, for sure. And their Halloween, the theme of it seems to be a lot of asking for prayers for the dead in different modes. So in their house, they would kind of do a Santa Claus type thing where they would spread a clean cloth on the table, set out pancakes, curds, and cider. And after the fire was banked and chairs set round the table for returning loved ones, the family would recite Psalm 129, which is the De Profundis, and go to bed. And then during the night, a townsman would go about the streets ringing a bell to warn them that it was unwise to roam abroad at the time of returning souls. I don't really know why, if everyone was celebrating that and they had just been to a bonfire and prayed in the cemetery, that they needed a guy ringing a bell to remind them not to go outside. But
on the real, you know why? Is because the guy ringing the bell is going into the homes and eating up all that porridge.
Oh, it's him.
he's like, grandma's here. You best not go downstairs. Mm-hmm. If you hear anything, it's definitely grandma. And then he's just going ham on the oatcakes.
And you know that back then cider meant alcoholic cider.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So he's going to get trashed.
Yeah, he's getting drunk. He's stumbling around and people are like, Father, is that you? And he's like, yeah, it's your dad. Thanks for the sight. Goodbye. Don't go outside.
Oh, boy. Do not go out. One link to our current Halloween that I found was that going to people's doors and begging for treats grew out of an ancient English custom of knocking at doors to beg for soul cake, in return for which the beggars promise to pray for the dead of the household, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, that's neat. So yeah. It's uncomfortably transactional for the Christians. But...
Well, there's...
I know. It does have a smack of paying tithes and all that, but, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, later they would get in big trouble for that.
Yeah, but... later that would be a problem, but... No, there are most holidays... Most holidays in England at least have, like, that tradition of the peasants banging on the Lord's door and demanding stuff or else they'll burn the place down.
Yeah, the bring us some figgy pudding comes to mind.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I mean, like, in one way it's transactional, and then in another it's like, it's a festival, it's a celebration, everybody loves food.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting they're called soul cakes. And this describes them as, they're a form of shortbread, sometimes quite fancy, with currants for the eyes. So now I need to Google
Wait.
This because...
I don't like that.
Wait.
If they're, like, cakes in human form, this is very interesting to me.
So I'm familiar with soul cakes, and that threw me for such a loop. I'm so uncomfortable now.
Are they not supposed to have eyes?
I've never seen one that is just a face.
Oh, no.
So when do you guys have soul cakes?
You're supposed to have them on All Souls Day, right?
Yeah. I didn't know if that was a through thread that went to the present day, but yeah, great.
well, no, it's because it's just that, like, the soul cakes are the candy later, right?
Yeah, they switch into later in time.
I really like the idea that there's a kind of food you can make that a ghost can eat.
Unlike in the Hollow?
Unlike in the Hollow, yeah.
But it's the people begging at the door that eat the soul cake.
Oh, okay, all right,
like,
yeah.
It's payment for the prayers for the dead of the household.
Oh.
So yeah, okay.
It's really, really kind of creepy that they made it look like a person or something. It's like, I'm going to eat this effigy of your dead uncle and then pray for
yeah,
him.
Yeah. Listen, Unk's not getting any prayers until I taste his eyes.
Oh, no.
Wait, it started as a really cute thing and turned grim the more I talked about the eyes.
Hey, Mary's the one that brought up the eyes.
Hey, Mary, you shouldn't have talked about
Mary.
The eyes. Well, I'm familiar with them in, like, they make little crosses because, you know, prayers.
Mm-hmm.
So you put the little currants in. I've never heard that they're supposed to be the face of your dead loved ones. That's a chilling revelation.
Well, I don't know specifically whose face it's supposed to be.
I need
to do a little more research into that to figure that out.
Yeah. All right, we have to figure out whose face.
Yeah. But it's interesting that you, at some point, ate soul cakes, too. That's really cool.
Yeah, well, I'm just really into, like, history baking, so...
Oh yeah.
And I'm goth, so it had to be like spooky.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's the best kind of baking, is spooky baking.
Exactly.
So here is a rhyme that they supposedly chanted at the door for soul cakes. Soul, soul, an apple or two. If you haven't an apple, a pear will do. One for Peter, two for Paul, three for the man who made us all.
Huh.
So that's definitely like a familiar sort of rhyme. It follows like a scheme I've heard in other like children's rhymes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like interesting.
Which, so that lends it credibility, I think. That does sound, because, you know, a lot of kids' things are just like, you know, how many clapping games are the same tune, but you just talk about different McDonald's sandwiches or whatever.
Children's clapping games about McDonald's sandwiches?
Well, okay, we didn't grow up in the same region.
Wait, hold on. I need to hear this clapping game now.
Hold on, let me see if I can remember the whole thing. I can't remember the hand motions because nobody liked me as a child.
Oh.
But I remember the rhyme was like Big Mac, Filet-O-Fish, Quarter Pounder, French Fries, something and Icy Shakes, and the Apple Pies, and you would clap to that beat.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. It sounds almost like it's going to the tune of the Lucky Charms jingle. Like Heart, Stars, and Horseshoes, and the Red Balloons.
It did, kind of, yeah.
Huh.
I can't believe you guys never heard that clapping game before.
No, we had Lizzie Borden.
That's a cooler one, I gotta say.
And then another note I have linking like all of these past traditions hurtling through time towards us to become what it was today is that the Scottish and Irish brought pseudo Samhain to the U.S., re-energizing the holiday with each immigrant wave. So I think this is referring to the mid and later 19th century.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, it's like potato famine.
Yeah, we had more Irish and Scottish immigration.
Yeah.
Oh. One thing I do know, I don't know how this fits into the timeline. I do know that Halloween was banned at some point.
Really?
And I remember this because, yeah, it was banned, like, I'm pretty sure it was New England.
Mm.
And I'm pretty sure it was, like, you know, the colonists in New England. And I remember this sticks in my head because they banned it, not because when you break down its bare components, it's, like, a very grim, dark, and very clearly pagan-based thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was because it was Catholic, and they didn't like the Catholics.
That whole, like, we're Christian, but we're not Catholic thing is so strange to me, because they essentially...
Yeah, Puritans hated the Catholics.
They lifted a lot of the same... Well, no, that's not true. This is, like, Anglicans and Lutherans. Lifted a lot of the same rituals and the same goddamn Bible, and, like, you know what I mean? Like... It's just a copy of it.
Part of the Puritans' whole deal when they came to the Massachusetts Bay Colony was that the Church of England was too Catholic for their taste, so they wanted to purify it and get rid of all the pomp and circumstance and ceremony and ritual and get it down to its bare Calvinist roots of relating to Jesus.
Which is why I guess they took such a dim view to the Catholics and their dead people party.
Yeah.
God, the Puritans. I just can't even.
This has been your hourly Puritan update with Ken.
Sorry, yeah. I've...
Well, it's honestly, it's very interesting because I think a lot of people just think, like, they were Christians and they don't know what Puritanism was or why they had to leave because they were dicks, basically.
Yeah.
Like, and it was a bloody conflict, like. Like, eventually, especially in the New World, America, the conflict between the Puritans and other, like, Protestants and the Catholics would become grim.
Yeah.
I mean, it caused a civil war in England, so...
Yeah, well, I'm not saying it was more grim, it's just, you know...
It was pretty grim all over.
I guess, to be fair, like, Americans just don't know anything about what happened in England, so...
Yeah, no, once we got rid of our king, we were just like, well, you know what? Just forget it.
NVMND.
Yeah, and, like, Puritanism as, like, the most grim, fatalist, stripped-down version of no-fun Christianity possible. Like, I don't know that people make that connection. Like, this is the most bummer Christian thing we could ever come up with.
I'm going to call them the bummer Christians from now on.
It's like, we have stripped all enjoyment from life. We are waiting to die and find out if we were destined for heaven or hell.
I've got to get there. I got to know.
Oh, man.
So this, like so many other things that become disruptive, we can blame on the Irish. As
what? What?
Irish.
Where did this come
from? Saying that
from?
As a person of Irish descent.
What's the connection?
I can say this. Well, because you said that the Irish brought it to, they popularized it in America when they came here and partied so hardied.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So they reinvigorated the partying that we had all tamped down because Puritans.
I wanted to frame it in a negative way so as to defame the Irish.
Oh, dee.
Is this self-loathing part of your Irish heritage?
Yeah. Have you met an Irish person?
Several. I live south of Boston.
I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know when costumes came into the mix? And I know obviously it's not gonna be like Shrek masks, but like when dressing up became like a part of this.
I think it always was from like way back to the pagan start of it. I think,
okay,
like,
that makes sense.
The celebration is basically about like the veil between worlds is thinner today, so the dead can come across. So that if there are quote unquote evil spirits walking around, we don't want them to recognize us. I guess in case someone came back for revenge. I don't really know why that
That's
helps.
That's so cool.
Halloween 2, the Revengeance.
I don't know why that helps. Like, honestly, though, why does it help to look anonymous if a spirit is after
I guess
you? Do they care who you are?
Spirits dumb.
I think spirits might be dumb.
I don't,
like,
I
isn't
don't
you,
know.
Like, they're like metaphysical, but like you put a paper plate over your face and they're like, dang it, can't find him.
Yeah, that is awfully strange.
Where are you at, though? He owe me $3.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I had never thought of that.
It's like a bird, I get, because like birds don't recognize you if you put a mask on, so like.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe things are harder when you're dead.
Unless they're ravens. Ravens can recognize masks.
Oh, that's true. Ravens can.
We're basically talking about people did tests on crow intelligence. And so they had a study where scientists in masks were dicks to crows, basically, to see if the crows could remember who was a dick and attack them.
Science is beautiful.
Yeah. And so they proved that the crows would attack certain masks, like someone wearing a certain mask, because they quote unquote recognized that face.
So in conclusion, the spirit world is crows.
I guess they're crows?
That makes sense.
Okay. But then here's my question. So if you're a spirit and you're evil and you want to go mess somebody up, Are you looking for a specific person or are you just out to get anybody who's wandering around?
Good question.
I'm unclear on that because their behavior suggests both.
Well, it's.
But then, like, you said, it, like, putting on a. If the evil spirit is just looking to make a night bad, it don't really matter what your face looks like.
Yeah, because here's the thing, disguising yourself only makes sense if the spirits are after specific people.
Wait. Are you disguising yourself as a spirit so the spirit doesn't even recognize you as human, just thinks you're another spirit?
I think that must be it. That must be it.
Okay, that makes so much more sense.
Okay.
I think we have finally cracked it.
We've done it. Case closed.
Leading into the 20th century a little bit more. So we have... Pranks were all the rage until World War II, when rationing put a damper on prank supplies, and war fatigue turned waking the neighbors from hilarious to rude.
Oh, well.
Oh, man.
So, from that change, we got a little less uninhibited and a little more neighborly about Halloween, I guess, which means that then municipalities had to come up with ways to appease the mischief makers to get them to not TP everything.
Yeah, because I'm familiar with in like early 1900s, mostly the 1920s, like Halloween parties being just like a quirky thing that adults primarily, because nobody cared about Halloween super like a lot for a while. Mm-hmm. Early on.
Yeah.
And so like it was just like a fun like let's pretend to like Satan. Like I want to be a witch, and tonight I am going to be a witch, and I made a cool cardboard cutout the devil. And then like, and I hadn't actually considered the next step being like, please shut up, please stop partying.
Yeah, somewhere. Yeah. But I think
and then it's like, you know who's done partying at six? Like
kids that go to bed early. But Dee, that brings us to like your part of the story where I'm curious about how did we get from like ruckus pranking to polite house parties?
Mostly just so like the churning gears of capitalism mostly. Mm-hmm. That sounds really dark. Well, like, you know, like very early on when you're talking like 1920s, you see the introduction of the like the ideas. I think we talked on our show about the Beisel catalogs and decorations like that. Mm-hmm. Before that, it was entirely homespun, which automatically means that this isn't like it's not going to happen for kids. Like, I used to have, like, a pretty small collection of, like, party guides that are entirely, like, how to make stuff out of crepe paper, at, like, how to cook and make it not suck. So it's, like, it's like, super homespun, like, Halloween especially, because it's extravagance, really. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, so Halloween became, like, for kids because everyone was annoyed with the adults raising hell?
Basically, yeah. Like, they're
amazing.
I think, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about that piece of it, but it seems like it was like the youths running around town, waking the neighbors, throwing stuff at them, vandalizing things, setting fires, like that kind of stuff.
I love that.
And everyone was like, okay, it's after World War I, World War II. We've had enough of this.
I would really like to sleep now.
Yeah, like, could we make this about candy?
So you see it mostly with just people who have the means to sit around making crepe paper pumpkins all day. Mm-hmm. And that starts the switch when you do see people are picking up on adults doing, like, all these, like, dumb, like, societally verboten things. Like, Halloween ends up turning into this thing where it's, like, one night a year you get to act like a horrible little goth. In a very, you know, 1920s, you start drifting into the 1930s, things are only becoming more repressed.
Yeah.
And Halloween is, like, a really great break from this sort of, like, cultural suppression that's, like, never going to stop in America, if we're being 100% honest with ourselves.
You know what? You may have hit on the whole point of why Halloween is so popular in the U.S. and not as popular in other countries. It could just be that we're so overworked and repressed, we need the release valve of having, like, a crazy, crazy party time.
Yeah, because when you start looking at the reasons people say, like, Halloween is their favorite, you end up getting, it's parties, it's dressing up, which is, like, an inherently, like, childlike, silly, fun thing. I'm not saying, when I say childlike, I say adults shouldn't or can't. But, like, what is fun about dressing up is that, like, return to, like, I'm gonna pretend to be a dog today. Like, you know, like, all of these things, like, you don't have to celebrate with your family. It's almost entirely, like, a friend holiday.
Mm-hmm.
It really is, like, just a break from what we have crafted of our society. Not to sound like the Joker movie about it, but, like...
Well, I mean, there are some pretty bummer aspects to American culture, let's be real.
Yeah. Yeah. Big time!
Yeah.
Yeah. Halloween is, like, a huge, like, accepted break from... And you can... Stop me if this is, like, a bridge too far. I think a lot of that King of the Hill episode about Halloween where, like, Hank Hill is, like, super excited about Halloween all the time, even though he's, like, super religious and, like, incredibly conservative. But he loves Halloween, and he dresses up as the devil for it every year, and he loves to scare the kids. And, like, that there it is. Like, that, to me, is the answer.
Yeah, that's kind of awesome.
Like, Hank Hill gets to stop being Hank Hill for a day.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah, my friend Megan loves King of the Hill, and I just forgot to look for it.
It's I recommend it. It's of its time, so there's always going to be points where you're like sucking air in through your teeth, but a lot of it's really tight and fun.
Yeah, she said the writing's really good.
But yeah, so we're like, you move from that to, you know, Beisel does jump in, and like a lot of companies make paper goods for Halloween just because mostly because they can. We start developing the technology to mass produce more often. And that is pretty much our slippery slide into it being for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because you start combining the fact that you can buy Halloween stuff. I believe the first Halloween costume was in the mid-1930s, and it was for children. Mm-hmm. And at that point, they see that there's money to be made, and you just start using you get the gears of capitalism to start tamping down on behaving in an inappropriate way, mm-hmm. as we slide into the 1940s and 50s.
That is interesting, though, that it's like it took manufacturing ready-to-buy costumes and party, quote-unquote, supplies to make adults willing to put out the effort to make it for kids.
Yeah, well, a lot of it is also just like, they got the chance to sell the way they wanted people to be celebrating it. Like, so, and especially, like, there's a lot of things are coming together for Halloween for some reason. Like, like you said, you're looking at the increase of the workday. Being able to buy things is a convenience. And when all anyone has the time to do is buy things, then the people selling the things get to decide how the holiday looks, basically.
Hey, that actually makes a lot of sense. I have a...
Thank you.
I have kind of a cute quote from an adorable website that is called AnokaHalloween.com. And it's basically about Anoka, Minnesota being like the first city to embrace like public celebration of Halloween. And apparently they just like, their thing is that they love Halloween. It's so cute. But
is it a real Halloween town?
Yeah. And so this is the quote that I found from their history section. It says, Anoka, Minnesota is believed to be the first city in the United States to put on a Halloween celebration to divert its youngsters from Halloween pranks. When Anokans awoke to find their cows roaming Main Street, windows soaked, and outhouses tipped over, which seems freaking extreme, I'm sorry. They decided something had to be done, but what? And it says, a costume parade and a block party seems like the perfect trick.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so their first Halloween events were in 1920.
Okay, yeah, I think I've read something about there was a city that was like the first to be like, we're having the city party.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I'm glad to know that it's extremely wholesome and I love it.
Yeah. It says that in 1937, Harold Blair, who was 12, delivered a proclamation to D.C. naming Anoka the Halloween capital of the world.
Well done, sir.
Way to go, Anoka.
Well done, 12-year-old.
Oh, I want to go to Anoka, Minnesota, so bad now.
I know. Yeah. I feel like I need to start making a master list of places that have, like, badass celebrations for Halloween.
I want to get, like, a road trip that includes the Mothman Festival.
I know. That would be amazing.
And then drifts up to Anoka for Halloween. Like, oh, that would be cool.
So good. But anyway, I guess the reason I brought the Antiques Freaks was because you know about all these Beisel antique paper products. And some of the ones that puzzled me were the ones that have, like, the spinning parts. So you can, like, you know, spin the little wheel and it'll give you a fortune. Which I guess was, like, a toy for parties.
Yeah, yeah. So those were adult parties, too, which I feel like...
Yeah.
Sometimes when you show people, like, this is the candle game where you turn out all the lights and you chant to the dark spirits to show you your husband, and everyone's like, for Halloween? Like, yeah, it was not for kids. some of them are weird. I think the one you're talking about is the Witch Fortune game.
Yeah, it has a wheel on it.
Yeah, yeah. I remember reading someone came down on Bicel really hard for their Halloween games becoming lamer as time went on.
Oh, no. It could also be that people were less and less content with a very simple party game as time went on.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think it had a lot also to do with the fact that a lot of the games just weren't good for children.
Well, I mean, you know. Also, I looked at them, and they don't look particularly fun for adults either. I think it was just sort of a, like, because it was based on, like, who am I supposed to marry? This sounds like sort of a flirty young adult party, we get to turn the lights off, and someone might kiss, type of a party thing, you know what I mean? Yeah. And at the time, that was thrilling to them, and as time went on, it was no longer thrilling.
I did have two examples ready for you of Bicel games, because I knew you were going to ask about Bicel.
How exciting.
And these are great examples, I think, of when people talk about older Bicel games being better and more fun than the newer ones. We have Zingo Halloween, Fortune and Stunt Game. So it has a little spinner, and wherever the spinner lands, there's a stunt you can do, and they're all written in rhyme.
Oh, no.
And they're... they're dumb, but I could see how if you were at a party and drunk, you've got, make a spoon linger on your little finger. And push a pencil, nothing more, with your nose across the floor.
Oh boy. Yeah, I guess they had to be drunk.
The rhymes really sell it.
Yeah, leap like a frog, bark like a dog. Turn blindfolded 3 times round, point to where your love is found. And we also have my personal all-time favorite, the I'm a Dumb Skull game.
What? It's called... it's called I'm a Dumb Skull?
I am a Dumb Skull, yes. It's from 1930.
Wow.
And it's a paper... It's a paper spinning game with, a, like, you know, the prop piece is a little skull with a bird on top.
Uh-huh.
And it's a scary skull. And it's same as the other one. You spin it, and it, like, it's a truth or dare facilitator, basically. But nobody can tell you to, like, dare you to pee your pants or anything. You set the board on the table, and everyone takes a turn spinning the wheel. When the wheel stops, showing a number, the party who turn the wheel is required to do the stunt listed below under that number. No player will want to get number 13, and some will try to avoid the penalty by yelling, "I'm a dumb skull."
So you can avoid having to do it if you yell, "I'm a dumb skull."
Yeah.
Incredible.
Right. While blindfolded, select whom you would think the best couple for a wedding. Like, I could see that going so well. number 9 is absolutely baffling. There's explain why you like Halloween, and then illustrate dramatically how you would sputter if someone pushed your head underwater.
So one of the dares is pretend to drown.
It's a package deal of tell me why you like this holiday and then pretend to drown for my amusement.
Huh.
That seems like a bad number to have landed on.
Number 3 is gotta be the strangest prompt for a dare. Give a 1-minute lecture on any subject.
Wow.
Crazy.
Whoa. Last Halloween got wild. We were giving lectures all night.
And there's some normal ones. Just sing a popular tune with full gestures. Read the palm of whoever is hosting the party. Dance a jig with your hands over your head. Like, just dumb stuff.
It sounds like they're trying to get the partygoers to loosen up.
Yeah, which is fun. But, like, I picked this one because the presence of tell me why you like Halloween and pretend to drown is, like, intoxicating.
Yeah, that's a wild dare.
Drown for me. But yeah, I think all of the stunt games are my favorites. They can be really, really fun. But yeah, the games are actually some of the, like, absolute most collectible ones.
Yeah, probably because they got handled a lot and they had movable parts which were more likely to break off, maybe?
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah. I do have also a fortune game, some of the more tame ones that people do not like as much. And you notice immediately that there's sort of like a weird gender gap here. So I'm going to give you three from the for girls. So there's a big tall boy with eyes of blue will someday fall in love with you. And like, if you can keep from being scrappy, you'll always be extremely happy. Before this very week is done, you're going to have a lot of fun. The boys say, if ever you go in a zoo, they'll surely find a cage for you.
Oh my goodness.
chew your food or very soon you'll blow up like a toy balloon.
Whoa, that is a wild fortune.
The extremely negging, take a bath just once a day and folks will think you're all okay. Like
were people like, bathing okay. too much?
this kid, I guess. Someday you'll either lead the band or sell behind the hot dog stand. Like, the boy ones are weirdly denigrating.
And also, like, that's not a fortune. You're telling two possible options. You're not saying what's gonna happen.
It's a anything could happen. Your fortune is, I guess, theoretically anything could happen.
Yes. Too funny. Well, thank you for coming over to New Yankee Workshop, guys. If somebody wants to look into Antiques Freaks, because it is one of my very favorite podcasts.
Aww.
Where can they find you?
They can find us by emailing us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, by joining our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, or by tagging us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com. We also have a Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks, where you can listen to deleted scenes and our very special Halloween presentation of Varney the Vampire, a 19th century Penny Dreadful that is far more dreadful than Penny.
I heard the earlier Varney the Vampire episode. You're going to want to do that.
Aw, thank you.
And you can listen to us in any podcasting app that is convenient to you.
Excellent. So they just search Antiques Freaks.
And we will pop up.
Yeah, we're pretty much everywhere.
Awesome. Well, that's convenient and easy to find you then.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It's so nice to talk to you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I had a good time.
Oh, and very, very happy Halloween.
Yes.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Spooky.
A lot of them are just tell a scary story, which, you know, it's classic.
Yeah, who doesn't love